IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome to episode 100 of the Killing It Podcast.
100!
We made it to 100!
Amazing. Not quite 2 years, but kicking booty, right? So
that's, you know, like that's a thing. Like we did a thing 100 times. Here we are.
A lot of times I find that success literally amounts to just showing up, right? You show up 100 times, you get to be proud of that. So,
well, and that's the thing. In such a transient world multiplied by a very rapidly changing industry, all put through the washing machine of 2020, the fact that this continues to go and people continue to be interested in the conversation, boy, that's the staying power of this conversation is fantastic, considered all the context that we just survived.
Well, yeah, so we appreciate everybody listening to us.
And I see Ryan's back at home, so there's no soft waves washing his feet during the podcast.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where you get the good with the bad, you take the bad with the good. Please do go anywhere in this world and do your job on a beach. It's a fantastic experience. Soul reaffirming, let me vouch for that. But just remember, you do eventually come back, and if you did it like I did it, and it was a record-setting 11 inches of snow and colder temperatures than Washington's had in years and years, I think maybe, just maybe, the universe was telling me not to get a little too cocky there, maybe just punching me in the nose just a little bit.
Yeah, dude, some of us are cold.
Meanwhile, I'm looking at, it'll be 70 this weekend. I'm gonna be out in the yard doing some yard work. So,
you know what? Pitchers and catchers report. I'm just focused. Like
we will be back to the weather report section of this podcast momentarily.
Yeah, momentarily. But before then, our 100th episode brought to you by a new sponsor. Are you still using on-prem file servers and VPNs to share files with remote workers? Ignite is a business class cloud sharing solution that works more like your on-prem server than other solutions. With a security-first approach to file sharing and collaboration, Ignite offers multiple options for sharing files and collecting files from outside sources. And do it all addressing data governance and compliance. Want to learn more? Check out ignite.com, and when you do, tell them the guys from Killing It sent you.
All righty. Well, topic number one today is not really about the specific topic, but about what it represents. So the topic is Zoom is beginning to offer some new services, including a cool new thing where they connect your receptionist by Zoom so that when people go back to the office, they can do what they're comfortable with, which is connect by Zoom to a receptionist and say, hey, I'm here in the front lobby, let me into your office. As weird as it sounds, I think this represents a new wave of technology that we hadn't really anticipated before, which is taking all the cool stuff that we became comfortable with in the pandemic and the close down and saying, hey, some of this might actually be useful back at the office.
It fit into three categories. I was reading an article just this week, and it put these technologies into three buckets. And the first was this idea of virtual collaboration tools, which are taking physical things and making them online, like whiteboards, sticky notes, like the actual tools. Then you have virtual office, which is the category of stuff making physical and virtual mix like this, right? So that we can have the receptionist be anywhere, or the idea of virtual space and exhibiting. And then the final is virtual events, right? So that we can get together collaboratively at stop points and be able to do that in a hybrid world. And what's interesting to me is we are really starting to get smarter about the types of things that are going to last. Here's a great example, right? Like your receptionist might be able to staff multiple physical locations, right? Because you might only need one to talk to who's physically in one location, but staffs the other ones, or doesn't need to be in the office all the time, or could be a rotating job. Like this is where the boundaries start getting fuzzy and we can actually do interesting things with the stuff we like from this time.
Well, so a number of episodes ago, Dave, you introduced us to a topic that I think is a universal requirement now. Digital parity, right? Not just that you are connected, but that the systems in the office and the systems anywhere outside of the office, whether they are at home or in a field office in a foreign country, wherever they are, there needs to be a parity there. You need to be able to do your job, have access to all the information, connect with all the right people. You need the equal ability to work whether you are in the office or out. What I find fascinating here is how rapidly the development in technologies has happened in the past year to the point where many of these remote technologies are actually now better than what is available in the office. I actually had a client say to me a couple of weeks ago, you know what, I'll need to get back to you when I'm at home because I don't have access to that information. I'm here in the office one day a week and I don't have access to all that information here in the office. When I get home, I'll give you a call tomorrow. And I was like, okay, make a note on the calendar. The world just flipped upside down right there. It's gonna happen. We're not, maybe not you, me, and the three of us on this call are gonna go back to an office anytime soon, but the world will gradually go back. And it's good to admit, hey, we all had jobs before the pandemic for a reason, because in office technology systems often suck and they need to catch up.
Well, and some of it's also a qualitative difference in these experiences. Again, we've all, pretty much every one of our listeners has been doing videos and webinars and, you know, had some kind of online experience for 15 or 20 years. So this isn't new to us. It's new to the rest of the world. But it used to be that meeting online by Zoom or something like that 2 or 3 years ago, it literally was a step down in what you expected. It was a lower quality experience, a lower level experience. It was considered second best because it wasn't practical to get together. Now it's like, okay, this is just a legit option. We understand when we're on Zoom, some lawyer's gonna show up looking like a cat, right? Dude's not gonna have his microphone turned on. You know, there's stuff and you just check off the box and say, that's what happens on Zoom and you move on. But people are actually having good experiences with a lot of the newer technologies. And so some of it legitimately needs to stay. It's part of the mix.
Well, the technology needs to stay as part of the mix. IT departments need to learn how to deploy, manage, and control these things so that they don't continue to be out of control. But then they need to take a look around the rest of the facility and the operation and go, well, what else did we learn in this whole disrupted year that we can adopt back into the office? And I mean, you know, Zoom, I think, is a perfect example, but there are many other things, the safety and sensor controls, the admission that a 2x2 cubicle is not actually a viable working environment for a professional. I don't care how expensive the real estate is. There are communication systems, safety systems. There are a lot of technologies that we've learned about in the last 12 months because we had to. And now we need to consume that innovation and go, wait a minute, this would actually make the office a better place.
Well, and that is the point of the exercise. And by the way, I continue to remain the, by the way, there's money in all this, everybody, because it's hard. Like if it was really easy to just snap your fingers and do this, everyone would have done it, because there's cultural things. Now, the reason Zoom kind of as a concept caught up so fast was the culture was forced. But in a world where it isn't necessarily driven that way, there are investments that make culture change, but you have to make them happen. And thus, you know, this isn't just a matter of like, hey, I'm going to have all the piles of tech. There's studies that say like innovation isn't driven by having the latest and greatest tech. Innovation is driven by investing in the tech you have and making sure that everyone is trained, understand, and embraces it. So if you don't do that bit, the most important bit, you won't get it. Now, it's hard for a reason. It's why I'm a big advocate for like having business process people or having training people on your teams, but you got to do it.
You know, it's funny. A year ago, I spent 3 weeks traveling. Yeah, like literally like a year ago today, I was on my way to Thailand, right? And so I used to have my three employees either working 2 or 3 or 4 days a week out of the office, working from home. And then, you know, when I traveled, it was 5 days a week. And then the COVID hit, and then it's been 5 days a week for a year, or almost a year. And what's primarily changed is not the way that we work. It's just a matter of getting into a new groove, that this is a permanent thing where we do this, and we do this, we do this. We figured out the right tools, because we always had kind of the option that in the worst case scenario, we all just get in the office and we all talk to each other. And that hasn't been an option, but we figured out other tools that work. And so everybody's got to figure out their own pace. And I do think that acknowledging the money side of it is huge. Like, if you are not talking about this to your clients, about what technologies did you learn that you want to keep forever when you get back to the office? Because we'll start by selling you the big screen 4K TV and the mount and the network.
Oh, sure.
Like, that's A number one on the list. Swipe your card, deliver the TV.
See, and it is still today's point. It will come down to individual organizational adoption and individual human participation, because if the people don't want to use the tools, they won't. And they'll find a reason to complain and say, it just doesn't work. That's why we were so amazed a year ago when the world just got shut off and we all just showed up at home and continued to work. Everybody would have said that was impossible until it was required. You can't require culture, so you better be paying attention to the human side of technology going forward. Speaking of the human side of technology going forward, our second topic here is, it needs to remind me to stop whining about my weather experience, and B, it is reminding all of us as technology professionals that continuity cannot be assumed, right? So the story that we are focusing on here is the power outages and all of the cascading technology outages in the state of Texas as a result of unprecedented winter storms that have been happening down there. Now, for whatever reason the weather changed and whatever reason the power grid went out, my very first reaction was, man, I hope all those people have an existing relationship with a managed service provider who can keep all of their stuff up and running. And then I come back and chuckle in the real world and go, please, the vast majority of our customers that have on-prem equipment or have deployed systems in the cloud, they just hope that things continue to work. And when the power goes out, that hoping strategy no longer functions. I'd love to get some input and the wisdom of your experience from the two of you. How do we bring the connectivity conversation back to the front in a post-pandemic, post-winter blizzard world?
Well, so I do want to separate the threads on electricity from broadband in this particular case, because, by the way, they are dependent, but there's kind of a bit of a layer of infrastructure to this. I want to flirt with politics, but make sure that I don't cross the line on here and say, like, look, there's reasons why you put boundaries on needs of what's going to be delivered for things like water and power. And we should have smart debates over where those lines are. But ultimately, the decisions do have consequences. And I think, you know, Texas has made one set of choices with its infrastructure that has a cost benefit, i.e. can be really low. And it has a flip side benefit, which is that there is risk inherent in the system based on low prices. That's a choice society makes. And I want to observe that. you as the business owner are going to want to make decisions about where you put your investments. So, for example, do you want to have redundant connectivity, redundant power? Do you want to compensate for this? In my mind, at some level, you will always pay for these things. Whether or not your power is super cheap, you may have to have additional backups because of the reliability of the infrastructure. You as the business owner are going to need to make decisions about what your risk tolerance is. I will observe myself. I have a low risk tolerance for such things. I like living in places that have certain degrees of reliable infrastructure that is managed from a regulatory perspective. And then I layer another layer on top of that because of my own requirements. That's my risk tolerance. You can make your own. But by the way, there's money in doing that analysis for your customers.
Right. Well, and, you know, part of it is what you're used to. Like, I remember, this is probably 5 or 6 years ago. Dave remembers it as well. We were in Dallas when there was, quarter inch, maybe a half inch of snow. They shut down the Microsoft office, canceled an event. Something like a week or 2 weeks later, I was in Wisconsin. They had 14 inches of snow. No, it was in Minnesota. They had 14 inches of snow, and then the next day they were expecting another 14 inches. And, you know, we called the Microsoft office, "Are you going to be closed tomorrow?" And they're like, "No, why?" So, you know, it depends on what you're used to. But the companies that are moving to Texas better get used to putting in uninterruptible power supply systems. In California, we buy these Tesla batteries that are like 5 feet tall and 4 feet wide and bolt them to the side of the house. I don't know if they sell those in Texas yet, but they will be soon. Yes. I know people who live in Louisiana that have, you know, diesel generators that they're not what you buy at Home Depot, right? These things are like 6 feet wide. So, you know, if you're going to be in an area where that's going to be the situation, you got to be ready for it.
Well, and see, this is where I think the conversations come together of we are working from everywhere and we are dependent on electricity as a basic assumption and then connectivity, broadband access on as a nearly as universal requirement. There once was a time where your department, your job as an IT professional, whether you were insourced or outsourced, right? Your job was this one little facility or these 2,000 square feet within this office complex. You are responsible for making sure that nothing goes wrong anywhere within these four walls. And then we introduced the cloud and risk, right? Oh, we're now putting our systems into the control of companies that are beyond our four walls. And in the beginning, people freaked out a little bit about that lack of control until they woke up and realized, oh, Google has more money than we do to pay for redundancy and continuity. Maybe their systems are just a little bit more reliable than ours. Now, in a work from everywhere conversation, you are the IT department for those 2,000 square feet of business operations and for the home access network of any employee who's working from home, any employee who is traveling, et cetera, et cetera. You personally cannot control all of these things, so you have to have a failover system. I was having this conversation with a client a couple of days ago in the context of now that the company is everywhere, controlling security on your LAN, WAN architecture is now a radically more complicated conversation. Oh, yeah. So apparently, to your point, Carl, is the UPS conversation. Y'all just woke up in a world where you assumed there would be electricity. Probably not a safe assumption.
Not necessarily. Yeah, exactly. Not necessarily a safe assumption.
Go ahead.
No, I was saying this is where, you know, again, there's opportunity here, right? But you've got to start redesigning your thinking. And it's why I'll beat the drum because I keep talking about it. Like I think about the idea of zero trust security. One of the reasons I'm so intrigued by this idea is that it requires a little less management. Is that I'm assuming a certain level of chaos. I'm assuming I can't necessarily control these endpoints. So I'm not going to spend so much time trying to do this infinitely complex problem. And instead, I'm going to focus on keeping minimal levels of access to the central data repository. I'm going to make sure things are done in a way that I consider completely viable. and that will simplify so much of my environment. That's why I think, you know, there's another level of why to rethink your own designs on this, because it's getting too complicated. You're not going to be able to control all those endpoints.
And I was going to say, it's interesting because what it brings to mind for me is pacing, right? We think everything's moving in the same direction. Zoom, zoom, zoom. We're getting, you know, more solar power and more, you know, bandwidth and on and on and on. But all these things don't move at the same pace. We could use 10 times as much bandwidth as we have today, and we would be okay, right? It's not that we would necessarily use it up right away, but a lot of little bitty annoyances would go away. And at the same time, we think batteries are, you know, getting bigger, better, faster at such a pace that they can, you know, they're going to keep up. But so does our consumption of electricity go up. All those companies that moved from California to Texas, they're taking computer equipment with them. Right? They got to plug it into something, right? So the pace of all these things is a little bit different. And at some level, it's all like moving at a breakneck pace. At another level, we can't work fast enough to catch up with ourselves.
Yep. And every technology professional has to remember, rule number one is no single point of failure. And rule number two is you will never, it doesn't matter how fast your server is, how capable the application is, how connected your enterprise, if the power goes out, that's just like having a Lamborghini with an empty tank of gas. You probably need to begin by selling UPS solutions. Contact your local vendor of choice on that conversation. It might not be sexy, but boy, it's absolutely fundamental. And then build from there. It's not safe to assume that these everywhere operations that we are now apparently comfortable with, you know, from a work from anywhere point of view, yeah, doesn't mean that everybody's endpoint connectivity is of equal quality or reliability. So, Dave, I really like your zero trust concept beyond security.
I've been flirting, but I'll tell you, owning a Lamborghini without fuel, I still own a Lamborghini.
Exactly.
But in honor of our 100th episode, our last topic, we're going to do a little bit of a revisit. So I went back and I looked at what we talked about in episode one, and the two bullets that jumped out at me was, first, apparently I did a rant on the trusted advisor, which sounds still relevant to me. But the other one was a topic around artificial intelligence, good or evil. For this one, I brought it back and I said, you know, what's interesting here is the how fast things change, but also how much they stay the same. Some of the topics that we've been talking about over this 100, particularly when you look at artificial intelligence, we're still grappling with this question. Now, I do think we've made some advancements in our thinking. You know, when this was first started, we were still talking theoretically. Now we've even gotten to the point where companies like Microsoft have come out and said, we're actively not doing things with AI because it violates an ethics board that we didn't have before. So I think we've made some forward progress. But oftentimes we think this is moving so fast, not necessarily so much.
Well, the other piece that I would add to it, which I don't think we talked about on show one, but it's been a theme from time to time in the last 2 years, is the contract with the contract for the web, right? That some kind of ethical discussion about how we use, embrace, and go forward with technology is relevant. And I think AI is where we've probably talked about that the most. Where, like, do you have the creepy chat? Do you have the, you know, robots who are just a little bit too real? Do you use ethics when you look at how bias is built into artificial intelligence? It's probably good that it's the most challenging thing we have to think about, because it is the most important thing we have to think about when we're turning over our thinking to machines. We say, this is the last thing I'm going to think about, is how I turn over my thinking to a machine. So I better think about it a lot.
See, and that's
a careful consideration.
We began this conversation, right, to go to the roots of our origin story here. We began this conversation about where the industry was headed and our voices in these important topics in a cabana poolside at a resort hotel in Las Vegas. that's where we were working. And we lived in a world of go everywhere, be everywhere all the time, and oh, by the way, still do your job. And we were discussing that from a practical point of view, but I think you're 100% right on, Carl. The ethics of what you can do versus what you should do, that will not go away from a security point of view, a surveillance point of view, a connectivity or access point of view, underserved communities, etc. One of the ongoing themes is the human side of our technology business. It's not just the technology, it's not just the business of getting paid to sell and support technology, it's the humans that use this stuff and are affected by it. And I think that needs to continue to be a permanent thread in our ongoing conversation. We've not solved it in the last 2 years. The industry, again, God bless Microsoft for that ethics board. That's a very good example that others should follow. The industry's made some progress, not nearly enough, because we're still fascinated by the can do, not should do part of the argument.
Well, another board that's supposed to be making ethical decisions is the whole thing at Facebook, where, you know, they had this board of geniuses that were going to come in from on high and bless their content. And then we didn't hear about it anymore. And then it didn't seem like anything really changed. And turns out Mark gets to make all the decisions.
To their credit, they're making some call. They have some to their first cases. They have started moving forward with that. But let's observe that is part of the larger solution. Like it is, you know, these are not standalone pieces that will come in and solve it on their own. They are part of integrated systems that need to work functionally and within the bounds of society as well.
See, I will also observe that one of our original topics was the ongoing and still remarkably as yet unsolved bet that we have of who's going to get a burrito which way first, whether delivered by drone or delivered by robot. Guys, that was 2 years ago, and the industry still has not given me my Jetsons flying car. I want my drone burrito.
But here's the twist. So you're in a foot of snow. Dave's got a little bit of snow, right? So Dave says the drone can't fly in D.C., right? Or Arlington. Is the robot practical in a foot of snow?
No.
Look, my inclination right now, I have not got money on this particular bet. It is more just a matter, but I still think at this point, the robot's going to win this one out because it is way closer to happening.
It's just a May delivery.
Right. Well, so there's sort of two big variables here, right? Which of the three of us and which mechanism happens? For me, it's the robot deliveries via little cart happen 3 miles down the road. I'm just slightly too far for that one. So it's so close. I could actually drive somewhere close and get a burrito delivered to me.
Right, you can go park there in the sidewalk and have them bring you the burrito.
Right, but that does not count because it does not come to my house. So that's – but it's feeling like, well, drones was a hyped bit. I think little autonomous robots are going to be much more of a thing sooner because it makes a whole lot more sense.
I would pay to see a robot on skis doing cross country to bring you a burrito.
I would totally pay for that.
Exactly. Thank you very much, Mr. Provider. I would pay you extra for that burrito to make it viable for you. But I still have to stand for the drone community in the spirit of our ability to get to very many disconnected places in a defined period of time. And I think that's one of the developments of this story that's happened over the last couple of years. From that, you could, in theory, deliver something with a robot or a drone to, is it commercially and technologically viable to, can you get it here in less than 30 minutes or I get that burrito for free?
I know we're almost out of time, but I got to say, I actually want to declare that we've moved backwards on this. A year ago, we didn't have drones and we didn't have robots, but we had lots of little people in their little bitty cars dropping off Amazon packages, and now 12, 15, 20 times a day, a very big Amazon truck that is a total gas waster comes by this street and stops every third house and then goes the other way and then comes back later in the day. I think we're probably wasting 10 times as much gas on delivery than we ever spent going and getting stuff ourselves. And I'm not just being a smartass. I think we're moving backwards with regard to at least the ecological piece of this.
Yeah, the can-do is
there. We need to get the robots back. But the problem is drivers are cheap, trucks are cheap, gas is cheap. And so at least in the middle of a recession, it's more economically feasible to have a bunch of big trucks driving up and down the street than little bitty robots.
And if the evidence of the mountain of cardboard in my garage is any proof, we're also going backwards on all the consumables and the packaging, on the ecology of all this delivery stuff. That we can is evident. That we can do it efficiently and viably, that's a different question. That we can do it on demand at customer satisfaction levels of service, I agree. I don't think we're within 100 miles of solving this problem. And 2 years ago, it seemed like we were 6 inches away.
So we for sure have another 100 episodes then, discussing exactly. These topics.
Because the problems of the world in 100 episodes.
Not only we have now come to the decision that not only have we not made progress, we perhaps have gone backwards. So I believe that may be the last point of the day.
Very good. And that will do it for episode 100 of the Killing It podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.